Remembering Swami Viswanathan, after reading the delightful article on Swami Viswanathan by Murray Feldman, published in the October 2012 issue of The Mountain Path, many inspiring memories of his saintly disciple of the Master were stirred to the surface of the minds and hearts of devotees of Arunachala Ashrama, New York, and Nova Scotia. Despite a lapse of more than 35 years, we all still feel the benefit of our association with this great soul. In this issue, we take the opportunity to remember him and offer a few anecdotes from his life, his writings, and our meetings with him in the 1970s. First of all, we should remember that Viswanathan was a close relative of Bhagavan. In India, Bhagavan would have been called his uncle, but here in the USA, where we unfortunately do not have the tradition of intimately embracing family members much beyond our siblings, parents, uncles, and aunts, Viswanathan would be called a second cousin to Bhagavan. It happened like this. Bhagavan's mother, Aragamma, had a brother in Diddigal whose wife died soon after the birth of his son named Ramaswamy. Because of the absence of a mother, that boy was reared during his early life by his aunt Aragammal and her husband Sundaramayyar in Tiruchuri. In fact, when Aragammal was about to give birth to Bhagavan, she was actually hoping it would be a girl so that girl could be paired up and married to Ramaswamy when they both grew up. The marriage of first cousins under certain circumstances is not that uncommon in South India. As we all know and are much thankful for, this wish of Aragammal did not materialize. As a result, many thousand from around the world have received and are still receiving the grace and guidance of the boy that was born on December 30th, 1879 in Tiruchuri. Back to Ramaswamy. He grew up to be a highly intelligent and successful attorney in Diddigal. You might remember that Bhagavan, when he was 11, attended school in Diddigal. At that time, he lived with Ramaswamy's father. Viswanathan was the third of five sons born to Ramaswamy and his devoted wife, Ammadu Amma. Like his father, Viswanathan was highly intelligent and had a serious spiritual frame of mind from his youth. He first met Bhagavan at Skandashramam when he was only 17 years old. The effect of that meeting completely transformed him, and 2 years later, Viswanathan quietly left home and permanently attached himself to Bhagavan. It was January 2nd, 1923, and Bhagavan had just moved down the hill from Skandashramam to where the present ashram stands. There was only a thatched shed over the mother's samadhi at that time. Viswanathan's father, Ramaswamy, went there to take him back to home, but Ramaswamy was so astounded to observe the spiritual grandeur of Bhagavan, whom he had not seen since he had left for Thiruvannamalai as a youth, that he was unable to press his request, or rather, he realized the good fortune of his son to have come under the benign guidance of such a sage. Viswanathan stayed on in the ashram and received personal guidance from Bhagavan in every step of his sadhana. Many years later, he told us, "Sri Bhagavan has given me the experience that he is none other than my own self. He is not external to me." In the Swami's presence, one could feel the truth of this statement. His transparent purity, his total surrender, and spontaneous joy inspired us to preserve in our hearts not only his memory, but also the letters that he, in his kindness, wrote to us in the 1970s. In addition to the letters we received from him, his brother R. Sivaraman gave us some copies of those he had received. In a letter to Sivaraman, dated May 5, 1959, Swami Viswanathan writes, "I just act as I am prompted from within, without any plan, elation, or depression. The spiritual background of my life makes it easy for me to live anywhere in any company unaffected. I shall be always grateful to Bhagavan for having opened to me this unhampered way of life, for having been initiated into it more by his own example than by any deliberate teaching. And I wish that you also learn by his grace to walk through life without friction or discard, to be established in harmony divine, which is but our real nature, the natural state of the inner spirit." After Bhagavan's Mahasamadhi, Swami Viswanathan Swami was one of the first devotees that the ashram management asked to return and live in the ashram without any particular responsibility or duties. Everyone recognized that his silent absorption in Bhagavan was a great source of inspiration to all who met him. On July 6, 1959, Swami Viswanathan writes again to his brother Sivaraman, "It is he who has nothing who will be able to command everything, and his resources are consequently unlimited. Returning by the Gopala Samudran this morning, after a short walk, I saw the Karnivati range in front of me, and I felt I was bound to the foot of the hills. If not right up to the foot, at least I was journeying whatever little distance towards it, and this was a happy thought. I think our journey towards the ultimate reality is similar. The moment you perceive its existence, have a glimpse of it, and every step you take is towards it, you then realize that the way is the goal. The real interest and pleasure, somebody has said, is in the process of achievement and not in the actual achievement itself. The journey to a place is often more interesting than the place itself." Many earnest Western seekers like Murray Feldman of Canada or the young devotees of Arunachala Ashrama, when they reached Ramanashramam for the first time, were met with the undeniable feeling that Viswanathan Swami was a pure instrument of Bhagavan. He warmly welcomed us into the family of Bhagavan's devotees, taught us the essence of his teaching, and demonstrated it in his own pure, humble manner. He took us on several Giri Pradakshinas, and as he pointed out and described with spontaneous cheer and joy, the places of Bhagavan would stop what he did, what he said, how he looked and acted. We young devotees would actually experience Bhagavan's tangible presence amongst us. In the Swami's company, we could never feel sad, for not having been there with Bhagavan physically. Bhagavan was a living presence for him, and he radiated that presence in every facet of his personality. We once tape recorded Swami's talks while on Giri Pradakshina, but the 40-year-old tape needs to be restored and transcribed. We hope to make this available to devotees in the near future. In 1974, Swami Viswanathan was given the task of editor of the Mountain Path magazine. He wrote to us on May 14, 1974. Mrs. Osborne has relinquished her editorship of the Mountain Path, and the management has put my name as the editor, despite my disinclination to shoulder that responsibility. As it is, I have to write an article once in 3 months. Other things will be taken care of by other devotees. They have set up an editorial board of 5 or 6 persons. I have not much zest in me for extrovert activities. I prefer to commune with Bhagavan in silence, and he himself has confirmed that it is the greatest help one could render for others as well. Yet, I shall put into writing whatever reminiscences of Bhagavan I have in my memory. I pray to Bhagavan to give me the light and energy to do this job. The following 5 years of his editorship clearly demonstrated that Bhagavan did provide him with the light and energy required to fulfill this task, though he humbly states in the same letter, "I hope you should have received the April issue of the Mountain Path. It is Professor K. Swaminathan at Delhi who goes through all the articles and makes them fit for publication. He is, I should say, the de facto editor behind the scene. My name is there only on account of my long connection with Bhagavan. Everything is his will, ultimately, and may it prevail." Though it may have begun as the Swami describes above, as the years rolled by, he took on the vast majority of the work required to bring out many inspiring quarterly issues of the Mountain Path. To be continued.